College football nerds here talking Iowa and Michigan for the Big Ten championship. Maybe people thought we'd be talking about Ohio State in this game, but we are not because of what Michigan did to Ohio State last week. And we did do a review of that game, Josh. Josh is here with me, of course, getting nerdy. We did do a review of that game, just so y'all know, if you want to watch it, it's on our channel. We're not going to get too much into reviewing or rehashing what we talked about there because we talked about it and it was on our live show. We did touch on it a lot throughout our live show. So a plug for that as well. If you want to catch that in podcast form or the replay on our channel, it's available. Want to let y'all know, as we always do, give us your score prediction in the comments and hit that subscribe and like button while you're down there. All right, Josh, I'm going to sort of let everybody know, in case they didn't see our top 10 video, just to get the hate out of the way, you don't have Michigan number two. I do have Michigan number two. So all the love in this video can come to me from Michigan fans, and all the hate can be directed right at you. What's funny in our...
Wait. Yeah, just remind me, which one of us had Michigan against the spread?
You had them against the spread. You didn't have winning, so it doesn't count. I'm not here to talk about the past, just the most recent past that was yesterday. Yes, Josh, for those of y'all don't know, Josh picked a really close game, Michigan losing, but Michigan covering, and it was already a tight spread. So to his credit, he had that a tighter game than I did. So, Josh, I think what's interesting, we just got finished talking about Georgia and Alabama. And how there is some things matchup-wise that can neutralize where Georgia is clearly a much better team than Alabama right now. There's things they can do to neutralize it. And I want you to get into this, this concept of even if there's a team that's playing a lot better or is overall more talented, when the other team that's maybe the underdog or not really as talented, when they have one side of the ball that's elite, offense or defense, or close to elite, that can neutralize very large gaps in every other part of the game, every other facet, and create matchup issues that give them a puncher's chance where they otherwise wouldn't. If they were maybe just good on both sides of the ball, it's almost an advantage to be elite and bad than it is good and good. Talk about that a little bit.
What ends up happening sometimes is that college football is about stall points and break points. It's a point we make a lot, that you need a certain amount of yardage in one side of the ball or the other side of the ball to make things happen, to not make things happen, you know, running the ball, passing the ball, etc. And like take the Ohio State game. I mean, Michigan's run game was effective enough against Ohio State that the dam burst. And you know, I'll go ahead and throw this little bit out so we just get it out of the way. Michigan was 7.98 yards per play against Ohio State. Now that was over a yard per play better than any game Michigan's played in P5 competition. Better than any game all the way back to the Northern Illinois game where they were 9.3. And so at some level, either Ohio State is just that much worse than, you know, I don't know, Indiana, Rutgers, or Ohio State had something of a bad game, and I think Michigan, there was something to be said that Michigan really wanted it more. But the thing is, when you start getting like 7.98 yards per play, your scoring and the way the offense moves for a team that was generally scoring in the low to mid-30s suddenly can get all the way into the 40s because it just totally shifts the number of first downs you get. It shifts your ability to sustain drives, and you felt that what feels a lot of times like momentum is not quite as emotional as you think it is. It's more your emotional reaction to the reality that Michigan was consistently able to get themselves in like second and four. And on second and four, they hit a very high likelihood of getting another first down. And so that emotional momentum is actually just reflective of the fact that statistically, they're moving the ball at a very good clip. And they were doing it efficiently, even really without a ton of explosives. There was just a lot of solid forward movement. Iowa, compared to Ohio State, is definitely a better animal at keeping Michigan from being ahead of the sticks. We talked about a lot that Ohio State's defensive statistics going into the Michigan game were 80% of opponent rushing averages, 91% of opponent passing averages. Iowa is 73% and 84%, so about 7% better on both run and pass. And one, I think Michigan almost has to take a step back offensively, maybe a yard per play or more, just because they were playing out of their mind versus Ohio State compared to how they've played against teams that are verifiably worse. But more than that, Iowa is really like a tier better defensively than Ohio State statistically. Ohio State just really hasn't lived up to whatever their preseason hype was. And so when you start taking that part into account, now all of a sudden the things that Ohio State wants to do, the things that are, Michigan wants to do, the things that make Michigan successful and an offense that is still predominantly run-based but is trying to mix RPO concepts in, become a lot more difficult. And when you look at Iowa, and we talked about this earlier in the year when they played Penn State, Iowa is a team that runs a lot of zone coverage and zone pressures, and they're really well equipped to deal with RPO plays so long as they can stop the run. If you got a team that really can stop the run with normal boxes and then plays that kind of coverage, we're finding it can be really effective at causing other teams to stall. So I think there's a real argument in this game that on the defensive side of the ball, Iowa, you know, if Ohio State defensively, let's say this year they're a 7 out of 10, and let's say Iowa is 8.5 or a 9, that 2-point difference, you know, let's say they're 20% better or 30% better, it's like about a tier better in our metrics, that doesn't equate to a 20% reduction in scoring. Quite frequently, that might actually cut your scoring in half, because football is this funny sport about trying to get 10 yards at a time. And whether you get 12 yards in three plays or 9 yards in three plays is very often the difference in a touchdown. And especially when you have to get 12 yards, you know, six times in a row, the ability to get a stop rather than give up an eight yard gain because you're better at doing run fits or whatnot, it really has a significant impact on your scoring potential. And if there's one area Iowa has that allows them to stay in this game, I think it is that advantage, and I think it's that difference in matchups compared to what the Ohio State game presented for Michigan.
And look, Iowa's not giving up 30 points all year. And the worst game was 27 points to Wisconsin. But in reality, man, I mean, if you look at the numbers, like I'm going to go back and look at the numbers. I've got the drives up, but I want to look at the numbers. Wisconsin threw for 4.7 yards an attempt, which is terrible, and ran for 3.5 yards per attempt, which is not good. The problem was Iowa ran for 0.8 yards and threw it for 5.3. So Iowa's offense was their worst enemy for their defense in that game. There were three scores right in the middle that really broke that game open for Wisconsin that were all short fields. And so Michigan's going to turn around and counter and say, yeah, Iowa's got a great defense, but their offense is bad, which I think at this point we can agree that it's pretty bad. Their offense is bad, and we've got a pretty good defense. So I think from that standpoint, you know, Michigan fans will be right to say that. The problem is, into what you're getting at, is if we're talking about a game in the 20s, variability then comes into play. Because one weird kick block, one fumble, something here or there could really change this game because points will be at a premium. So with that, let's look at the model and run through that pretty quick before we get into any more discussion and see what the data shows.
Our model, for those that aren't acquainted, because I know we haven't covered these teams a ton, is based off trying to look at how your team did against everyone they played, look at the matchup specific to this game, and then for each team, it looks at historical data and generates a scoring model that's unique to each team. Sort of a self-learning concept, and it's entirely relational between these two teams. It's not like a power rating model. And one of the intermediate statistics we generate, because I think it's useful, is your defensive percentage of opponent averages allowed, meaning Michigan allows teams to 86% of their rushing averages, 83% of their passing averages. That actually numbers got a little bit better after the Ohio State game. Iowa allows 73% and 84%. And I think the notable thing here really is that Iowa's offense starts from such an anemic point. I mean, it's actually kind of crazy when you look at what the stats really are for Iowa this year, running and when I look at them, I just constantly have to double take, because running the ball at 3.27 yards per carry is not good. Passing the ball at 6.4 yards per attempt is not good. And we often say, you know, really about 4.5 yards per carry is competent. About 7.5 yards per attempt is competent. Iowa is not averaging competency, run or pass, this year. And when you're at those kinds of averages, man, it's just hard to be good. And so even though Michigan I think their run defense is sneakily average. 86% of opponent averages is not great. When you start at 3.3 yards per carry, you end at 2.8. And the sad thing here is I really think Tyler Goodson is one of the more underrated plays in the players in the country. He's 4.6 yards per carry himself. But he's so singularly responsible for everything they do, and there's so many sacks and negative plays otherwise that he's kind of negated. And he's been a 100-yard rusher, I think, three of the last four games. I think that's right, if my memory serves. And I'll verify it right now while I'm talking. Yes, that's true. I think it's just not going to be enough against a Michigan defense that is quite good. And so you end up with this really horrific expected sort of yardage potential of like 3.8, 2.8 yards per carry, 6.8 yards per attempt, 5.3. And Michigan at 5 yards per play, because they are, you know, there's some semblance of a passing game more than anything, that gets you to about 28 points. Iowa, under 4 yards per play expected, only, you know, 19 points in our model, and that's probably being a little bit generous. I think the biggest takeaway here really is the numbers aren't that in favor of Michigan. The numbers are all ugly, but you're right on the cusp of both these teams kind of shutting down. And the model is probably being a little generous from a scoring perspective for both. I think a game that is in the 20 to 10 range is not really that far out of expectations. And yeah, I mean, I'm taking a yard per play off them right now manually in the model, and it puts it to like 23-15, whereas the score is expected to be 28-19. They're just kind of at the floor. Again, football's a funny game. It's hard to keep a team from scoring about 17 points because they just get a random deep pass. If they're sputtering, they're just going to take deep shots and see which one connects, or they'll get a special team score or something. You get enough. If everybody's struggling, then you just punt, punt, punt. You both get like 17 possessions because you're hardly ever running plays, and somebody scores eventually. And that's kind of where this game's at, only Michigan is a lot more competent than Iowa. And you have a 28 to 19 result that is expected to come in, you know, I'm just being brutally honest here, a pretty darn painful fashion.
One thing that we don't get into a lot on this show is emotional aspects, psychological, gut aspects. I do think that there's an interesting dynamic here for Michigan in that they had the luxury of playing at home last week and being the underdog. Playing at home and being the team with nothing to lose. And they showed it. They were loose. They were easy. And there was nothing about them that showed the tightness that we saw from, for example, in Alabama in the Iron Bowl, where they were just like, they were making countless unforced errors. And so I think there's something to be said about that in this game, where I was the team playing with no expectations and nothing to lose. And so that probably is to their favor some. And we've seen this with Ohio State against Wisconsin and Northwestern in the past in these championship games, where they look real bad for a half because they come in real tight and they make a lot of these unforced errors. And but the other team, because they don't have the offense to take advantage of it, ends up having everything go right for them, and they got a 7-point lead at the half or something like that. And I think that's how the Northwestern and Wisconsin games went in recent years, where, you know, everything they needed to do, they did right. But they couldn't penalize and punish Ohio State not being ready to play or not being in the game enough to get enough lead out in front for when they ultimately did start throwing haymakers and coming back, that they had enough cushion that they could win the game. And I think that's what we're going to see a little bit in this game too. I think Michigan's going to have a little bit of a hangover. But I think they're the better team. I think that they are legitimately have earned number two in the country. And maybe this win will, if they win, it won't be as pretty. So people will question that a little bit. But I think it's more matchups than anything. I'm going to go and get my score here. Give me Michigan 24, Iowa 13. And tell me what you got.
I have Michigan 23, Iowa 13. I'm getting really irritated of you copying my scores this week because it's going to make us look silly. Let's hope we're right, because otherwise we're both wrong this week. I agree with you totally. And there was a lot of talk that Petras had a shoulder injury earlier this year. But anyway, you know, got kind of benched for Padilla. I think it was the Northwestern game. And look, I think early in the year, there was a point kind of around midseason where it looked like maybe they were turning the corner. You know, Colorado State, Maryland, they threw the ball fairly well. They looked a lot more competent. Even if the Colorado State game was close, there was more going on there. And then it just, you know, at that Penn State game, it kind of fell off a cliff. And a lot of people felt like they wouldn't have beat Penn State if Sean Clifford will be in. I will say I have been one that's been very vocal with the fact that that is a gross oversimplification of the reality of that game. You know, I'll take a tangent here because I think Iowa fans will appreciate it. Yeah, Penn State was scoring, but Sean Clifford was 5.8 yards per attempt. It's not like he was throwing the ball well. He had zero touchdowns and two interceptions. Now, Taquan Robertson, when he came in, was 1.6 yards per attempt, 34 yards passing on 21 attempts. He was abysmal, and State fans are correct to say they might have scored another touchdown, maybe two touchdowns. But I think it's a little more complicated than that. Penn State got some early, you know, early scores, and they weren't moving the ball either. I think the reality for Iowa just as much is they have suffered from their own quarterback problems this season. You can't ask Goodson to be everything all the time. And then otherwise, they just really haven't found a guy to carry them. And I think against Michigan, it's just going to be killer. Michigan is a better team. They are more talented. I don't know that they have clear-cut top-end weapons on the offensive side of the ball to the extent that some of the other powers have in recent years. But they've got good players. The running back position has real depth. And I think at the end of the day, that's just going to be too much for Iowa. And that's why I think it's 23-13. I just don't think Iowa's going to move the ball very well. I think the lack of consistency means maybe even if they get yards, it's going to stall and it's not going to generate points. But it is one of those low-scoring games that, and we say this over and over again, if you're below 25 points predicted, you're saying that one punt return touchdown, one, you know, pick six on a drive that might be promising, that can be 10 14-point swings in a game where you're only expected to score 13. All of a sudden, that 23-13 becomes, you know, 27-6, or yeah, like 20-16, right? If you throw a pick six and a promising drive. So the ability for Iowa to win this game is absolutely there. I don't think, even though it's a 10.5-point spread, I don't think the odds of Iowa beating Michigan, maybe this is an interesting point to kind of end on. I actually think in some ways it's more likely that Iowa beats Michigan than Alabama beats Georgia this week, even though the spread is 4 points higher in this game. And it's just because I think it's low enough scoring, and I think these teams are herky-jerky enough that there's a lot of variability on the table. And Iowa, who was pick city early in the season, has the ability to generate defensive scores at such a rate that I do think this game, you know, 10 points is probably the average result, but it could spring. And we haven't even talked about the fact that Michigan could blow Iowa out as well, which I think is equally likely in its own way. But I think this game could swing pretty wide from that 10-point predicted margin.
All right, that's it for us on Iowa and Michigan. Remember to give us the comment in the comments below. Give us your score. Let us know how you think this game is going to play out, and we'll get down there and discuss it with you. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. God bless.